Yes, it's Friday again. Welcome back, Dennis Stewart.
Thank you, my dear.
Nice to see you. Now, last week we started to look at the potential benefits of herbs and supplements in helping resist and fight wintertime ailments such as colds, flu, and even more serious conditions such as bronchitis. You didn't get very far in dealing with this last week, but today you want to talk about the lifestyle factors, specific supplements and important immune stimulants.
Yep.
But to start the discussion, you want to talk about a potential life-saving soup.
Look, it might seem rather strange to start the program with that, but I want in a moment to talk about probably one of the most famous soups that's used in cold countries, particularly in China, Tibet and Nepal. A soup that is, in fact, used literally for life-saving purposes. And I've been fortunate or unfortunate enough to have met two people, one of whom was a very, very significant, long-standing friend of mine who passed away recently, dear Don, who was saved literally by the soup that we're going to talk about. Wait for it, listeners. It's pretty simple stuff, but it could be life-saving.
Well, it's not just only a show about herbs. It's also a cooking show.
We're a broad church. We're a broad church.
We're talking about wintertime ailments on 2NURFM, Health Naturally. And Dennis, you've got a life-saving soup recipe.
Look, it is literally life-saving. I'm talking about what is known in Chinese medicine and Chinese tradition and Chinese culture as a Chinese chicken bone broth or soup.
Mm.
Now, this is not something that is just taken as a nice soup, as it probably is, but it's used strongly medicinally in Nepal, Tibet, and in China to treat conditions that would be very, very threatening to one's health. By this I mean that in that cold climate, and particularly around the Himalayas, where it's particularly cold, it's common and popular for people to go down with very, very threatening infections, sometimes pneumonia. There aren't too many hospitals. There aren't too many antibiotics around that area. So what is frequently used is that preparation known as Chinese chicken bone broth soup as a primary remedy to address the suffering person who was quite ill, sometimes with pneumonia. And this preparation, which has been used for centuries, has shown itself as being quite capable of helping people fight even the most threatening of wintertime infections in that part of the country. Now, I had a colleague, Don, that I mentioned at the beginning of this program, who validated the efficacy of what we call the Chinese chicken bone broth soup or broth. Don was on a hiking trek into the Himalayas and he had a number of Tibetan Sherpas with him doing the hard work, taking all the luggage while he was purportedly enjoying the hike to the high country. When he was well up, he fell particularly ill and the diagnosis was subsequently made as pneumonia. The problem was he was so far removed from any medical assistance that he would have died had not for the prompt activity of one of the Tibetan labourers, one of the workers, who recognising Don's symptoms of, he didn't know the term was pneumonia, but he knew that Don was very sick. He was immobilised, he was feverish, he was breathless, he was very unwell. Straight away, what one of the Sherpas did was go into a village and get hold of a chicken. He brought back the chicken, feathered it or got rid of the feathers, plucked it and put it in a pot of boiling water. He made the simplest of soups, which that culture has done for centuries and centuries. He made a chicken bone broth soup. And the emphasis is on the bones of the chicken. So when my dear wife has made it for myself over the years and for our kids, it has always been going to the supermarket or the butcher shop and getting, say, the frame of a chicken, devoid of flesh, bringing it home, putting it in a pot, boiling it up, with, let me emphasise, with ginger and with shallots. You boil it up until you've reduced the amount of water to about half. You strain it, and there you have fundamentally what's called Chinese chicken bone broth soup. And interestingly, the actives, whatever they are, in the chicken bones, bring about a remarkable effect. The administering of this simple but traditional Chinese chicken bone broth soup caused Don to survive. It broke his fever. It saw him being able to struggle down the Himalayas to get help. And to this day, he vouches for the efficacy of that simple soup based on the bones of the chicken as something that can help, I use the term help, not take the place of, but help in manage the treatment of a serious condition, even something like pneumonia, or in our society, particularly with elderly people, when they're struggling with a bronchitis, particularly in wintertime. And this is one of the coldest of winters that I can remember for a long time, below zero twice so far this winter up in the Hunter. For elderly people, and not only for elderly people, but particularly for elderly people who are struggling to beat, despite the medical treatments that are offered, who are battling to beat some of the challenges, particularly to the respiratory system and to their immunity, the prompt use, so let me emphasise, the prompt use of the Chinese chicken, bone broth or soup, taken in warm to hot, copious amounts, can be a breakthrough support remedy in beating the deepening possibility of some of these wintertime ailments. It's a simple soup. It's based on whatever there is in the bones of the chicken. It's flavoured a bit with shallots. There's a lot of ginger in it, and ginger is known in Chinese medicine as one of the most positive and useful remedies for fighting fevers and stopping infections, or helping stop infections, assault the respiratory system. It's a simple soup. My wife has made it for myself over the years, for our kids when they've gone down with a bad virus, a bad flu, a respiratory condition. Not that I've used it much, but that's the first thing my wife will go to when I'm not well with a virus that's feverish and threatening me in a respiratory way. She makes up the bone broth soup exactly in that simple way. I don't know what it is, but I leap out of the bed to resolve. So, listeners, not a very difficult soup to make, but it's the bones of the chicken. Nothing else.
No meat.
No meat, just the chicken bones. That's why my wife gets the frame of the chicken, which you can sometimes get from supermarkets. Or you can use the chicken necks, but it's the bones that are considered to convey the healing effect, particularly with ginger and shallots, but with a lot of ginger in it as well.
So it has to be raw to begin with, or can you get a barbecue chicken, eat the meat?
No,
and then...
it's best to use a chicken in an unprocessed way. Think of the little Sherpa sidling up to Don, my friend, plucking, killing a chicken, plucking it, gutting it, exposing just its bones, tossing it in a pot, boiling it up in a simple Tibetan or Nepalese way, administering it hot and saving Don's life.
Okay.
True story, but I'll finish it off by saying I know a second person very closely, a good friend from up the Hunter, that had a similar experience when she was trekking in Nepal, and she would argue very strongly that it was that bone broth soup, the chicken bone broth soup, that saved her life and allowed medical treatment to reach her in time.
Well, there you go.
It's good for elderly people to think, and good for nursing homes, I would say, to consider when you have prostrate elderly people who struggle at the best of times. In wintertime, when they're unwell, boil up some chicken, bone broth or soup.
There you go. Well, this has gone from Health Naturally to Cooking with Dennis Stewart.
How
and
about that?
We've got Michael from Maryville on the line. Hi, Michael. You've got soup questions too?
Yes, just some experiences for Dennis, please.
Thank you, Michael. Lovely to talk to you, Michael.
You too. I'm a long-time listener. I rarely miss your show.
Thank you.
and grateful to the help it's given me over the years.
Thank you.
So, yeah, basically, my life has changed. Nothing out of a packet anymore. I make everything from scratch.
Right.
And chicken stock is one of my staples.
Yes.
And that came from sitting in a doctor's surgery probably 20 years ago, yes, reading a Reader's Digest, yes, and confirming basically everything that you've just said. Yeah, and it has to be boiled. The Reader's Digest, the article, said they've got to be boiled.
Yes.
Three hours.
Yes.
So I collect, I eat a lot of chicken drumsticks or wingettes, yes, or whatever. I've got a set of secateurs hanging up in the kitchen.
Yes.
Every meal finished, I cut them in half so that the marrow and internals of the bone are accessible.
Yeah. Wonderful.
And I freeze them in bags until I've got enough to do a big job on the stove so that I'm not wasting energy. I simmer it for actually 4.5 hours.
Yeah, good on you.
Yeah, just to be sure. Yeah. And I make those most wonderful chicken soups, similar along to the lines you've just explained.
Oh, great.
And I freeze them all up in the freezer in containers, and the moment I get sick, it's my turn to.
Wonderful.
Recently had COVID for the third time recently, and this time wasn't near as bad as the first two times.
Mm.
But I had it for about 2.5 weeks, but the chest phlegm is the thing.
Yes.
And you basically feel it doing you good and sitting out in the sun and walking around releasing the phlegm.
Absolutely.
But yeah, that chicken stock that I make, I use it as a staple flavour enhancer for just about everything I make. I make other soups as well.
Yes.
Because you can't live on chicken soup as your only meal. absolutely love it. Yeah, enjoy your show. But I just wanted to contribute that I'd actually read that when you boil it, it takes 3 hours or 3.5 hours to release a certain acid, which is instrumental for your body to utilize to clear the phlegm off your lungs, congestion off your lungs. So,
yep.
Yeah, everything you've just said, and thanks for keeping me alive.
Thank you very much, Michael. Look, that's been incredible feedback. What you're doing is everything that I would wish listeners to do with the information we talk about, and your validation of the usefulness of the chicken and the chemistry of the chicken bones makes what I said sound more credible. And I like the way in which it's a go-to remedy for you, as it has been for my dear wife and myself all of our long life. We have helped our kids with it and mentioned it to others, and using it particularly in an emergency, and particularly for elderly people, Michael, I emphasise this, that suffer a lot of respiratory problems and are elderly, and when winter time can be a real challenge to them, the use of the chicken bone broth, if it's taken regularly during the winter time, I believe is probably one of the most important survival foods.
No, I believe so too. I do everything instrumental to along your guidelines.
Good.
Natural
Good.
is
good on you, Michael.
And much appreciated, Dennis.
It's a pleasure, mate. Thank you.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks, Michael. I have a question. I'm assuming you strain the soup. You're not eating the bones.
No, you've strained.
Yeah,
what Michael has pointed out there is valid. What I mean, you just don't throw the bones in. The idea is to put the bones in a big pot with X amount of water. It doesn't matter. But you boil it and boil it and boil it until you've reduced the quantity of the water or the liquid or the broth down to about half.
Okay.
It's a good boil. And during that process, by the way, you've also put into it some ginger, raw ginger. That's very important. The raw ginger goes into it, as also some shallots or onion. There's a lot in this which could be talked about for hours. But let Michael's confirmation there, and by the way, that was a spontaneous response. This was not something organised, but that was incredible feedback because that's exactly what you do. It's not sophisticated.
Mm.
You just use the bones of the chook. You might break it up a bit if you want with secateurs, throw it in a pot with X amount of water, boil it and boil it and boil it for 3 to 4 hours until it's about half the volume with the shallots and the ginger in it, strain it off. You can freeze it if you want. It's best obviously taken when it's warm, if not, you know, really, really warm. And that then frequently manifests itself in perspiration. The body becomes warm And the idea of that soup is the primary organ that benefits from it is the respiratory system.
Right. Well, if you haven't had lunch yet, there you go. You've got an idea. We have Kerry from Warners Bay on the line. Thanks for holding, Kerry. How can we help?
Yeah, hi, thanks. I have a granddaughter who's 4 and a half, and she's suffered all her life with some sort of dermatitis all over her. Sometimes she's just covered in it, and even when it goes away, her skin is so rough.
And dry.
Yeah, it's terrible. We've tried, been to the doctors and chemists and everything we can think of, but I thought you might have some sort of an idea what we can use on her.
She's obviously under a paediatrician, is she, Kerry?
She is, because she's not a good eater. Yes. She's never been a good eater. We actually had her on feeding tubes from when she was very young for about, I don't know, maybe a year. It was a long time anyway.
Is she asthmatic as well?
No, it doesn't seem to be. No.
You usually find that, well, not usually, but sometimes you would find that eczema and asthma tend to prevaricate or go together. But if she's 4 years of age, obviously what you can give to her is fairly limited. But I will mention a few things which over the years I've found useful. You can go to the literature and Google it, and you will find that what is known as oil of evening primrose has been used, sometimes dramatically successful, in addressing infantile eczema and even in adults, although it's less effective seemingly in adults. Now, evening primrose oil is a very safe substance. It's usually purchased in capsules, but you can purchase the oil as an isolate, and it's not the worst thing in the world to take, put it that way.
Right.
It's not like castor oil or things like that. And the administration of oil of evening primrose is useful because it contains what are called essential fatty acids, some of which have a direct bearing on the health of the skin, particularly skin that's dry and prone to inflammatory conditions. It's the first thing that I would, and you should discuss it with your doctor or paediatrician, even though it's, in my opinion, harmless. Anything you do with a child should be run past your medical manager. I've never known reactions to evening primrose oil, but you should mention to your doctor that you've discussed it with me, and I've had some good results with it. Now, there are a couple of herbs, again here, because I'm going to mention a herb, you'd need to be cautious in your administration of it. You're talking about a little child here. So there is a herb called Viola tricolour, sometimes known as heart's ease. A strange name, but the herb, botanically known as Viola tricolour, it belongs to the pansy family, sometimes called tricoloured pansy. It's readily available, and it's the basis of many European teas that are used to address particularly infantile eczema. If you are able to get hold of the work of Dr. Rudolf Weiss, his book extols the virtue of that herb quite dramatically. It's a very safe herb, and you can make a herbal tea out of it. And the herbal teas, I still argue, are one of the best ways of administering herbs. And I am increasingly impressed with the way in which simple herbal preparations sometimes do a better job than the more sophisticated and more costly preparations, such as the tablets, the capsules, etc. So my advice would be that you discuss those factors with your medical managers, what I consider to be the safe oral administration of oil of evening primrose, and reinforced by some warm tea that is pleasant to take, and as I've said, probably the basis of the treatment of kids' eczema in certain European countries. So there's a couple of starting points. As I've suggested to all my listeners increasingly, go to the net. You'll find a lot of information if you were to punch in both those herbs, Viola tricolour or heart's ease, and oil of evening primrose. You'd be surprised at how much information there is on that.
Okay.
I think you would do well with that. One writer that I've used in my years as a reference also recommends the topical application of evening primrose oil, that is applying it as a, mm-hmm. as a lotion or a cream.
And that would be helpful too because of the fact that she doesn't eat or drink very many things.
That's correct. Mm. That's correct. So try that. That was a recommendation made by a British author and an exponent of oil of evening primrose. I think that's a starting base for you, Kerry, anyway.
Wonderful. Thanks very much for that, Stuart.
Okay, thank you. Okay,
thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Kerry. Bye. Okay, next we've got Sam on the line. Sam, hi. You've got a comment about chicken soup.
Yeah, hi, Dennis.
Hello, Sam. How are you?
Yeah, good. Yourself?
Good, good. Thanks for ringing.
No problem. Just a quick one.
Yes.
I'm listening to you on the radio with the shallots, the ginger and the chicken, China.
Yeah.
This song pops into my mind.
Sing it.
Sorry?
Sing it for us.
Ah, okay.
The world will listen to you, Sam. Sing it.
I'll word it.
Oh, okay.
I'm a band from called Smash Mouth. I'm not really into them. Okay. It's called Chicken to China, the Chinese chicken.
Oh, I know Chickity China, the Chinese chicken, had a drumstick.
You grab a drumstick and your brain starts ticking.
Your brain starts ticking.
Oh, okay.
Honestly, I started singing it as I was listening to you while I'm painting the house and you're blaring.
Okay.
And just another one, with all that chicken stuff, my family's Macedonian. I was brought up with everything you talk about, I just eat.
Wonderful.
Grew up with a soup called chicken chili saft.
Ah, similar to it.
Yes, and the main thing is ginger,
yes,
chili, garlic, but it's mainly the chicken neck and the chicken feet.
Yep, they're the parts that contain the marrow.
Yes, yeah, there you go.
That's it. Look,
it
obviously comes in variations, but as I've said, it's certainly well known and well utilized in cold countries in North Asia. But Macedonians are a fascinating group of people. I've quite a few Macedonians that are patients of mine, and I treasure them because they still have a lot of the traditional knowledge, whereas some groups that I've found seem to have lost some of that. The Macedonians hang on to it, and I relate to them very well, and I say to all younger people who have elderly Macedonian parents or grandparents in particular, sidle up to them. Get the information.
Mate.
Get the information.
Absolutely. I was brought up on it. My bubba, that's grandma, passed away in 2011.
Yeah.
I miss it dearly. And food was untold.
Well, you need to get what remaining information you can, Sam. Because
my wife and daughter, they cook and they use a lot of the stuff like stuffed peppers and stuff like that. And so we're trying to keep it going. But thanks for your time. I just wanted to mention that.
Oh, I'll remember the song. I might even learn how to sing it.
I'm there singing it, like wording it as you're talking about it.
Okay.
Like.
Well, there you go, Sam. Look at what we've created. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, mate. Bye.
Thanks
bye,
so
bye,
much, bye. Sam. Okay.
Oh, I love the Macedonians. I love them.
Next, we've got Greg from Rutherford on the line. Hi, Greg. How can we help?
Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I'm very well, Greg. Nice to talk to you. Cold up there this morning?
No, yes.
Yeah, it was. It was at Cessnock too, about -1.
you had it worse than I did.
I think so.
Dennis, I'm an ex-concreter.
Yes.
My knees have been x-rayed and it's osteoarthritis.
Yes, wear and tear.
Wear and tear.
Yes.
Now, the doctor I see wants to put me in for a replacement. I'm not too keen to go under the knife.
Mm-hmm.
I like natural remedies more than the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder, I take glucosamine, crystalloid, and calcium, and manganese, and all the rest of it, but I just want a Rigidige tablet that will do some good or take the pain away, but I can't have a high salt content because of my high blood pressure.
I understand. Look, Greg, you're doing the right things, but what I'm going to suggest is, or what I'm going to do, is send you a packet of a product known as Glucosaplex, not glucosamine, Glucosaplex. It's not a retail product. I prescribe it for my patients. because you've taken the trouble to ring in, I'm going to send you one of these as a gift from the program.
Oh,
and
thank you.
I am confident that it'll do something for you. I'm not saying it's superior to any other product, far from it, and I'm not promoting it, I don't need to, but I'm happy to send it to you to see if it gives you a bit of an edge and keeps you away from surgery for the time being.
Well, that's what I'm after, Dennis.
Yep. We'll see how you go. I'll get it to you, but you're doing all the right things. You're doing all the right things. The only other thing I would perhaps suggest that you might take into account, say, some fish oil. It doesn't always do the job, but it's cheap. It's got a reasonably good reputation for some forms of arthritis, more so rheumatoid, but some of my patients with osteo have benefited from it.
Fish oil. 3,000 milligrams per day.
To get benefit from the fish oil to function as a mild anti-inflammatory, you need to be taking about 6 to 9 grams of fish oil a day. Now, I know that because it comes up in Mosby's reference on supplements and their role in medicine. And there, the workable dose is up considerably from what you're taking. And I'm glad you raised that because I frequently take time to mention it to patients that are using the fish oil to address various musculoskeletal problems, that you may well be not taking enough of it. And I suggest about 6,000 milligrams a day as a starting dose. You could be missing out on a benefit. But anyway, I'll get some of the product that I mentioned to you. You can give me some feedback down the track. Yes. Augment it with a good dose of the fish oil and see how you go with that, Greg.
Thank you, Dennis.
Okay, good on you.
Thanks, Greg. Bye-bye. Just make sure you give reception a call and they'll get your details.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, bye. Now, Sam was mentioning Smash Mouth, the song with Chickadee China, the Chinese chicken. I've done some investigation.
Oh, well done.
It is not Smash Mouth. It is the Bare Naked Ladies, and the song is called 1 Week, and I have happened to have found it. So we will play that at the end of the show today.
Well, I'm glad you introduced it because my reputation would be smashed.
Yes. So,
Hang on till the end of the program. Yeah, have you got it going for us?
Yeah. It's not so much about soup, but it does have a bit of soup and chicken in it. So there you go. Now, you mentioned lifestyle factors. How do they contribute to resisting wintertime ailments?
Look, I'll be very quick. We need to realise that wintertime can be a threat because it represents coldness and it represents dampness. In traditional medicine, particularly of an Asian complexion, those factors are responsible for precipitating disease conditions. So one of the first things that we learn from traditional medicine is the importance of warmth as a lifestyle factor. And this worries me because even up in the valley at this time of the year, I see people wandering round with thongs on, sometimes barefooted, boys and girls, hardly dressed, walking along the footpath, shivering. That is a pathway for catastrophe. So one of the first messages that I give to listeners generally is respect the fact that cold is a pathogen and needs to be resisted with warmth. That means clothing, housing needs to be warm. Without that, it's very difficult to triumph over some of the wintertime problems. We also need to take into account that wintertime requires the use of what I call warming food. This is not a season for salads, for goodness sake. Salads might be all right in the height of summer. In wintertime, they should give way to what most cultures appreciate, that we should be eating foods that have warmth behind them, that are known traditionally to be useful for wintertime nutrition. We should be eating a lot of soups, a lot of hot food. Get rid of the idea that cold food is always good, that uncooked food is always good. That's a misnomer. Cooked food in wintertime, in my opinion, is mandatory, and learn from the Asian, North Asian experience of the importance of warm, hot food morning and night. This is particularly relative to getting used again to making our own soups, pea and ham soup, which my wife makes beautifully together with many other soups. They should be a backbone, good solid soups. I remember as a kid in this town, and I'll finish on this point, when I would come home from playing soccer, but I wasn't a bad soccer player, actually, under-10s, under-12 with Adamstown Rosebuds. I was pretty good.
Twinkle toes.
Oh, absolutely. I can remember coming home. Soccer was played in wintertime in those days, and Mum would always have on the stove, so to speak, in Adamstown, in Brisbane Water Road, where we lived, inevitably a big pot of soup, and it was as thick as you could possibly imagine. You could put the wooden spoon in it to stir it, and the spoon would stand vertical. But we looked forward for that. We would be cold and shivering. We'd come home. Mum knew what to feed us. Hot soup on a cold day after you played soccer in cold weather and it might have been wet. Mum realised the importance of using food, particularly hot soups, at a time when hot food is mandatory, I argue, for people to maintain good health in wintertime.
Well, you're making me hungry.
Oh, I'm pleased.
Thank you. Okay, Melinda from Maitland is on the line. Hi, Melinda. How can we help you?
Oh, hi. I'm just inquiring about the glucomycetes that Dennis was talking about, mm-hmm. with the gentleman with the arthritis in the knees.
Oh, yes, yes.
I've just been diagnosed with osteoarthritis in mm-hmm. the hip, and I'm only 54, and I'm trying to basically take things that are natural to help me because I'm too young for a hip replacement.
Yes. Look, very quickly what I would say is that there is good evidence out there that combinations, regardless of their names, that involve glucosamine and chondroitin have made somewhat of a good reputation in addressing osteoarthritis particularly. So up where you are in Maitland, your pharmacy or your health food store, they would have good preparations, all of which would have those two constituents in them. They're the primary ones, and your health food store proprietor or the pharmacist would be able to give you an indication of the dosage relative to making those two substances work in a tablet or capsule form that you might be offered. Forget about the name of the product. Most osteoarthritic preparations that incorporate those two substances, glucosamine and chondroitin, would carry the right levels of actives. The other thing is, and I'm a great enthusiast of this, the product that probably was one of the first natural products to make the reputation for being useful in addressing more serious levels of osteoarthritis was the New Zealand green lip mussel. The New Zealand green lip mussel. I've actually lectured on its discovery and the paper that was written by a well-known Scottish doctor working in a Scottish hospital, his very successful use of it in addressing a serious case of osteoarthritis. It comes in various forms. It's inexpensive. Sometimes it's incorporated in preparations that are based on glucosamine and chondroitin, but in any case, it's inexpensive. I think you'd be well advised to go to your pharmacy or your retail health food store and talk about those substances. They're the ones that I would recommend.
What was the last one? What was the New Zealand
green lip mussel.
Green lip mussel.
Okay. M-U-S-S-E-L. You can buy it in the supermarket to eat, but the product usually comes in a powdered form, in a tablet, in a dose-related form.
Okay, good luck with that, Melinda. We are done for the day and we're going to play that Bare Naked Ladies song 1 week. It's got Chickadee China, the Chinese chicken in it, but it's sort of halfway through the song, so listen carefully. This is Health Naturally. We'll see you next week, Dennis.
Right.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.